Something you should see. The man had been strong. The muscle on his arms and back clearly revealed as he hung from two posts, dried blood streaking his wrists where the shackles held him upright. His head hung forward, still and lifeless, the length of his broad back striped with two-day-old whip-strokes. Frentis noted his left foot was stunted, the front half having been hacked off at some point. The standard punishment for slaves who run from their masters, death being the fate of any who run twice. Opposite the dead man, a young woman had been chained to another post, arms drawn back and legs tied in place so she couldn't turn, a leather gag secured about her mouth. She was partially naked, breasts and shoulders showing the signs of repeated beatings. She collapsed in Ilion's arms as Lekran smashed the chains with his axe, and the sister cut away her bonds. She choked on the water from Ilion's canteen, an expression of utter confusion on her face fading slowly as she took in the sight of Frentis, her eyes tracking over his garb, the blue cloak, and the sword on his back. "Brother?" she asked in realm tongue, her accent unmistakably Asraelin. "Yes, Brother Frentis." He knelt at her side. "This is Sister Ilion." The woman's head lolled, her gaze losing focus. "Then I am finally dead," she said with a shrill laugh. "No." Ilion took her hand, squeezing it gently. "No, we are here, come to save you at our queen's orders." The woman stared at her, apparently unable to comprehend the reality of her survival. "Jerin," she said after a moment, raising herself up, gazing around with a wild animation. "Jerin, did you save him too?" She stopped as her gaze found the man hanging from the posts. She sagged in Ilion's arms, and voicing a despairing wail, "I told him we shouldn't run," she whispered. "But he couldn't stand the thought of him touching me again." Frentis turned at the sound of a fearful whimper. A plump little man in loose robes of black silk stood trembling beside the ornate fountain in the center of the courtyard, his chins bulging somewhat as Master Renziel pressed his sword blade harder, forcing him to stand on tiptoe. "Where are the horses?" he demanded. The plump man raised a shaking hand, pointing to an arched doorway off to the left. Renziel raised a questioning eyebrow at Frentis. He turned back to the woman they had freed, seeing the depth of hatred in the stare with which she fixed the plump black lad. "Not just yet, Master," Frentis told him, "if you don't mind." They found another 6 realm folk among the slaves, none more than 40 years in age, all possessing skills of some kind. "Jerin was a wheelwright," his wife explained. "Her name was Lissel, a chandler from Ransmill come to live in Varenshold at her husband's insistence. Money grew tight after the Desert War. Varenshold would be our fortune," he said. She began to voice another of her shrill laughs, but mastered the impulse with a visible effort, her gaze moving to the villa's owner, now stripped naked and chained to the post where her husband had died. 34 had questioned him for a short time, his skills unnecessary as the black clad had been all too eager to cooperate. "He tells of a larger estate, 12 miles to the east," 34 reported. "The master there is a renowned breeder of horses, and has also purchased many slaves from the recent influx." "The nearest garrison?" Frentis inquired. 10 miles north of here. A single battalion of Varatai, though fewer in number than they should be. It seems the council has been concentrating forces on the capital recently." "Not for much longer." Frentis took the whip they had found on the overseer's body. He had tried to run, displaying an impressive turn of speed for such a large man, but Slasher and Blacktooth were faster. Frentis placed the whip in Lascelles' lap. "I leave this matter in your hands, mistress." He went outside where Draker had gathered the slaves, the realm folk standing apart from the others, some already holding weapons taken from the Varatai, and greeting Frentis with bows and expressions of grave intent. The others numbered over 40 people, and displayed only fear. A clutch of girls, the youngest no more than 13, clustered together in a protective huddle, casting tearful glances at the men surrounding them. Only one slave was prepared to meet Frentis's gaze, a trim man of middle years, dressed in a clean, dun-colored tunic. He winced a little as the first scream came from the courtyard. The crack of the whip, an indication that Lissell was a quick learner. "You are one here?" Frentis asked the trim man. He winced again as another scream sounded, then bowed low. "I am, master." "I am not a master, and you are not a slave. What is your name?"
"Tekrev, honored citizen."
Frentis studied the man's face, seeing the keen intelligence he tried to hide with a servile stoop. "You were not always a slave. Those born to slavery have no names. What was your crime?"
"An over-fondness for dice."
Another scream pealed forth, longer and louder, followed by a babble of desperate entreaties and promises. Tekrev swallowed and forced a smile.
"And a dislike of resultant debt."
"Your skill?"
"I am scribe and bookkeeper here. Should you require my talent, honored citizen, I am at your disposal. I'll have need of it in time. Whether you choose to offer it is a matter for you."
Francis stepped back, raising his voice to address them all.
"By order of Queen Lerna, these lands are hereby seized for the unified realm, and all who reside here afforded the rights and privileges due free subjects of the crown."
There was little reaction beyond bafflement, most remaining immobile, eyes fixed on the ground, the clutch of girls huddling even closer together.
"You're free," Frentis went on. "You may go and do as you please. However, any who wish to join with me and free your brothers and sisters are welcome."
More silence. Even Tekrev just stared at him in incomprehension.
"You're wasting your time, brother," one of the realm folk said, a short but broad man with the teardrop scars of the forge visible on his forearms. "You'll find more spirit in a whipped dog than this lot."
Frentis gave them a final glance, seeing the truth of his words plainly enough, and suppressing a sigh of frustration.
Slavery is more than just chains, he knew. It binds the soul as much as the body. "We leave in an hour," he told the slaves, turning away. "You may take what you like from the villa, but I advise you not to linger."
The Varitai exhibited no fear, kneeling with his arms bound behind his back, stripped of armor and undershirt to reveal the pattern of scars. They were less elaborate than the matrix that once covered Frentis's chest, similar to Lekran's markings, but plainly administered with scant regard to artistry or the discomfort of their wearer.
"How much?" Ilion asked, removing the cap from the flask. "No more than a teardrop," Frentis said, watching the Varitai keenly as she stepped closer, pouring a small amount of the liquid into the cap. "Varitai are not as strong as Curitai," Lekran advised in a wary tone. He stood at the rear of the bound slave soldier, axe at the ready. "Could kill him."
"Then we'll try a smaller dose on the next one." Frentis nodded at Ilion, and she upended the cap, allowing the contents to fall onto the scars on the Varitai's chest. Unlike Lekran, there was no scream. The Varitai's head snapping up, the veins in his neck bulging, teeth gritted so tight it was a wonder they didn't break. His eyes widened, the pupils shrinking to dots as spit began to drool from his mouth. A second later he collapsed, convulsing on the ground, with white foam covering his lips, his jerks gradually slowing to twitches, then nothing. Frentis crouched down to feel for the pulse in his neck, finding it weak and slowing.
"He's dying," he said with a sigh.
He looked up as a shadow fell across him, finding Weaver staring down at the scene with naked disgust. Frentis began to rise when Weaver's fist came down in a blur, connecting with his jaw and sending him sprawling. Frentis lay stunned, hearing Ilion's sword scrape free of its scabbard. After a moment, his vision cleared and he found Weaver on his knees, both hands placed on the dying Varitai's chest, paying no heed to Ilion, who had touched her sword point to the nape of his neck.
"Leave it,"
Frentis ordered, getting to his feet and waving her back. Weaver kept his hands on the Varitai's chest for some time, his expression one of deep concentration, eyes half closed and lips moving in a silent whisper. Frentis heard Ilion stifle a gasp as the slave soldier's scars began to fade from his chest, shrinking to faint pale lines in a matter of minutes. Finally, Weaver removed his hands and rose, stepping back as the slave soldier issued a weary groan.
"He'll sleep a while," Weaver said, turning to Frentis with a stern expression. "Freedom will not be won with cruelty." Frentis rubbed his jaw, feeling the bruise already beginning to form and the iron tang of blood on his tongue. "I'll leave it in your hands next time." They built a pyre for Lysel's husband in the courtyard, liberally dousing the stacked wood with oil before doing the same to the villa. She had left the owner alive, though he was barely conscious, hanging bloodied and ruined from the posts. She had borrowed a knife from Ilion, and a small red lump was visible in the large pool of blood beneath his splayed legs. Frentis assumed he would probably find the flames a mercy. They moved east as the sky dimmed, the burning villa casting a tall column of smoke into the air at their backs. The stables had yielded half a dozen carts, but only enough horses for 10 riders. Frentis sent Master Renciel and Lecrin to scout their route, and set the others on either side of their small column. The freed Varitai sat in the back of one of the carts, head lolling and features drawn in a perpetual frown of deep confusion. They had managed to elicit only a few words from him, naming himself only as Eight, before voicing a keenly expressed desire to know when he would receive his next dose of Khan. "It's a mix of various drugs," 34 explained. "Subdues the spirit, dulls the memory, and captures the will. He will feel its absence tonight." Frentis recalled the nights 34 had spent writhing and moaning in the forest after he had discarded his own vial. His recovery had been swift, but he was a man of considerable inner strength and had at least the memory of freedom, whilst this Eight had clearly been a slave since birth. "Have we freed this man or cursed him?" he wondered out loud. "Freedom is never a curse, brother," 34 insisted, "but it is often a hard road." Frentis turned as a shout came from the rear, finding a small group of figures running from the burning villa. He tugged his horse to a halt and waited as they came into view. Tekra followed by the clutch of girls, plus a few of the younger male slaves, all burdened with various bundles of clothing and valuables. Tekrav came to a halt a few yards away, chest-heaving and staring up at Frentis with a desperate appeal. Behind him the girls and the men huddled together, not so fearful as before, but still wary. "Honored citizen," Tekrav began, falling silent as Frentis held up a hand. "My name is Brother Frentis of the Sixth Order," he said. "If you join us, you will be free, but you will also be soldiers. I offer no protection, and promise no victory." Tekrav hesitated, glancing back at his companions in search of guidance. They shuffled uncomfortably until one spoke up. A dark-skinned girl, no more than 20, her voice coloured by a faint Alperan accent. "Your men will not touch us?"
"Not unless you want them to," Draka said, quickly lowering his gaze at Frentis's glare.
"You will not be mistreated in any way," Frentis promised the girl. She exchanged glances with the others, then stepped forward with a nod.
"We will join you."
Frentis briefly scanned the bundles they carried, picking out the telltale gleam of gold and silver amongst the rolled blankets and clothing.
"Keep hold of any weapons," he said. "But we cannot be burdened with loot. Discard it."
He sat and waited until they complied, tossing away their shiny cups and plates with varying degrees of reluctance, Tekrav wincing as he gently laid a small gold-embroidered tapestry on the ground.
"Sister Ilion," Frentis called her over, "these people are in your care. Commence their training on the morrow."
They came upon the horsebreeder's villa the next day, finding it far richer in spoils but also much better protected, boasting a complement of over 30 house varietai. It sat atop a wide hill, surrounded by enclosed fields where horses were set to grazing and mounted varietai moved in well-organized patrols.
"Not an easy prospect, brother," Draka said.
They had crawled to the top of a rise a half mile away.
"If I was looking for a likely place to steal, I'd pass this by."
"We fight our way in," Lecrin said with a shrug.
"It'll cost us," Draka warned, "and we've scant swords to lose."
Frentis suppressed a groan. He had resumed taking Brother Kellen's sleeping draught the night before, and the resultant headache left him impatient to get on, and tempted to accede to Lecrin's desire for a fight. He was about to order them to their mounts when Ilion dropped down beside him, the Alperan girl from the villa crouching at her side. Brother, Ilion said, I believe our new recruit has some intelligence to impart, but my Valerian is too poor to discern her meaning. The girl blushed a little as Frentis and the two men turned to her, looking down and stumbling over her first words. What is your name? Frentis asked her in his broken Alperin. She lifted her gaze, a faint smile playing over her lips and making him wonder how long it had been since she heard her own language. Lemera. Your words have value, Lemera, he told her, switching back to Valerian. Speak on. I have been to this place. She pointed at the villa. The master sent me and two others. We were amusements for the owner's son on his birthday. That was almost a year ago. Frentis turned to Lekran, who grinned and nodded. We kept the Varitai's armor. In the event, they suffered but one casualty, one of the newly freed realm folk displaying an overabundance of courage when Ilion led them over the wall that shielded the villa's southern side. The main house had already fallen, and the remaining Varitai were being forced back into the central courtyard, formed in a tight ring around their master and his family. He had made the mistake of coming to greet them at the main entrance, his broad grin disappearing as Tekrov's black silk mask fell away from his face, and Lekran's axe hacked down the nearest Varitai. Despite his shock, the master's wits were quick enough to organize a hasty defense as he fled back inside, though not quick enough to organize an escape, which should have been his first priority. Frentis had pulled his fighters back from the dense knot of Varitai and set the archers to work when Ilion's recruits came over the wall. The young man had run at the Varitai unarmored and armed with only a small wood axe, his face betraying a depth of hatred nurtured over the months of his captivity. He managed to bury the axe in the skull of a Varitai before a dozen rapid sword strokes cut him down. However, he had disordered their ranks sufficiently for the following recruits to pile in and break their formation apart, the men hacking away with clubs and axes, and the girls stabbing with the daggers Ilion had distributed. Cursing, Frentis raised his sword and led his fighters into the fray, Lekran voicing a joyful whoop as he leapt and bore a Varitai to the ground, both feet planted on his breastplate and axe sweeping down. It was over in a few moments, all the Varitai slain along with the master and his family. The master lay across the bodies of his wife and son, a boy who couldn't have been more than 15, his father's black silks rent in a dozen places and soaked with blood. I tried to hold them, brother, Ilion said, face lowered in contrition, but the realm folk are full of rage, and the others can't understand a word I say. His rebuke died on his lips in the face of her evident dismay. Gather the weapons and armor, he told her. Then search the villa. Take any documents you find to 34. Draker called to him from atop the west-facing wall, waving his club. Riders coming in, brother! Frentis ran outside where Rensil waited, mounted with sword drawn. Frentis mounted his own horse and unhitched his bow from the saddle. Master, he said, trotting his mount to Rensil's side. Shall we? They managed to take two of the riders alive, both knocked senseless when they tumbled from their mounts as Rensil's sword neatly severed the ties of their saddles. Frentis accounted for the remainder with his bow, none of the Varitai coming close enough to press a charge and displaying a typical failure to realize the hopelessness of their cause. As promised, he gave the captives over to Weaver. Valin had intimated the man was possessed of a confused mind, and his behavior during the voyage had done much to confirm it, so it was strange to witness the grim understanding on his face as he surveyed the two unconscious Varitai. Great pain, he said softly. Pain can bring freedom. Frentis held up the satchel containing their supply of the Lernic elixir. It freed me. It will free them with your help. The screams were terrible, rising high into the night sky as they gathered in the courtyard to eat a meal of looted spoils. The freed slaves had proved even less welcoming of liberation than at the first villa, several weeping at the sight of their master's body. He was sparing with the whip, Lemero explained. Allowed the children he fathered on the pleasure slaves to live. Usually they are exposed and left to die. He would keep them until they were old enough to sell. A generous man. These people are fucking disgusting, Draker said when 34 translated.
casting a dark glare at the slaves, keening over the master's body. "Shut up, you simpering dogs!"
They scattered as he threw a half-eaten chicken leg at them, fleeing into the darkness or retreating to their quarters, too fearful to even ask about their fate. The Varitai screams ended abruptly, heralding a silence that seemed to last an age. Frentis scanned the faces of his veterans at the fire, for the first time seeing a grim understanding of the magnitude of their task. A handful against an empire was always a hopeless cause. He had known it from the day they sailed. But had they?
"Should we go after the runners?" Ilion asked, breaking the silence.
"They'll no doubt spread warning of our arrival."
"Good," Frentis said. "We are here to cause as much fear and confusion as possible."
"We need more fighters," Lekrin stated. "The cowards we keep finding won't make an army."
"Then we may be in luck."
34 produced a large ledger, opening it to reveal row after row of neatly inscribed figures. The master's scribe kept excellent records. It seems he did much business with the Varicum to the south.
"Varicum?" Frentis asked.
"I don't know this word."
"Training school," Lekrin translated. "For the Garrisai, those chosen to partake in the spectacles."
"Slaves?"
He nodded. "But not like Varitai or Curitai. No binding for them. Captured in war and chosen for strength or savagery. Nearly got sent to one myself, but the Curitai quota was light that year."
"It will be well defended," 34 advised, "inside and out." Frentis turned to Lemera, noticing for the first time the perfection of her profile, skin smooth and flawless. A few hours ago, he had seen her stabbing at the master's body, teeth bared, and voicing a joyful laugh every time the knife came down. "It's a rare man who can guard against beauty," he said.
Chapter 8. Valen. Wise Bear called it the Long Night, the time when the sun vanished from the ice for a full month, its coming heralded by the shortened days and the increased brightness of Grishak's breath.
"Must reach islands before it comes," he had warned the first day they set foot on the ice. "Long night kills all."
The first week had been easier than expected. The novelty of traversing such a vast and stark environment doing much to dispel their discomfort at the ever-deepening cold. Wise Bear led the way, moving with short, economical strides, with Iron Claw lumbering along behind. The Great Bear would sometimes disappear for a day, returning with dried blood on his snout, though Valen was baffled as to what prey it had managed to find. To him, the ice seemed as barren as the Alperan Desert, a place void of life for all its beauty, fully revealed at twilight when the green-tinged fire danced in the sky and the ice became a mirror to its majesty. The Lonak would fall into a reverent hush when the sun fell, whispering thanks for Grishak's blessing. Wise Bear seemed to hold a similar reverence for the dancing skylights, greeting their appearance by sinking to his knees and holding his bone staff aloft, a lilting song rising from his throat. Valen had yet to hear the shaman speak of any god, but it was clear the sky fire held considerable significance.
"He is not praying," Kirill said one evening as Valen's gaze went to the old man, her face somber as her song related the meaning of Wise Bear's lilting ode.
"He offers greetings to his wife and the children they lost on the ice." Valen looked up at the swirling green fire, watching it coalesce and break apart in an unending dance. It might resemble flame, but there was no fury to it, the constant swirl conveying a strange sense of serenity.
"He thinks she's up there?" he asked.
"He knows it. Every soul that ever lived is there, looking down on us until the world's end."
"The beyond made real," Valen mused, watching Wise Bear finish his song and lever himself upright with his staff. "At least you can see the object of his faith."
They moved only in daylight at first, horses and ponies laden with supplies, and dragging the sleds Wise Bear had them make before leaving the shore. Simple frames of twisted gorse branches skidding along on runners fashioned from seal bone. Scar, like all the horses, had shied the first time his hoof touched the ice, eyes widening in alarm at the unfamiliar sensation, only consenting to venture further at Valen's gentle insistence. Even after several days, the animal still displayed a wariness of his new surroundings, as if understanding the grim warning Wise Bear imparted when they set off.
"Horses won't last. Have to eat them before the end."
As the days grew shorter, the shaman kept them moving into the night, until the last vestige of luminescence lit the horizon, leaving only enough light to see by as they made their camp. The nightly fires were small, their supply of wood quickly diminishing and augmented by horse dung which burned well but birthed a foul stench, clawing at clothes and hair.
"What a grand adventure you lead us on, my lord," Lorcan said one evening, his red-nosed face scarcely visible amidst the swaddle of seal fur, his misting breath leaving icicles on the hem of his hood.
"Cold that cuts to the bone, and the stink of shit from morn to night. If I have failed to say so before, please accept my humble gratitude for the opportunity to partake of such momentous history."
"Shut up," Kara told him wearily. She sat as close to the fire as she could, her face a worrying shade of white. The past days had been harder on her than any other in their company, seeing her stumble on at the tail end of their narrow line, shaking her head at Durenna's entreaties that she ride her pony for a while.
"I should have sent her back to the Reaches," Valen thought, a pang of guilt prickling his chest as Kara held her mittened hands to the fire, her eyes a dull gleam in dark hollows. "She gave enough at Altor." Wise Bear appeared at Kara's side, stooping to peer into her face with a critical frown before straightening, his expression one of hard reproach, as he looked from Durenna to Markon.
"Why you not share?" he demanded.
Markon frowned at him, heavy brows bunching in bafflement.
"Share what? She is welcome to my rations?"
"Ka!"
Wise Bear pointed his bone staff at the large gifted, sweeping it round to point at Lorcan, Durenna, and Kirol in turn.
"Not meat. Share power."
He laid a gentle hand on Kara's head, his voice softening with a faint tone of regret.
"She is needed."
Durenna leaned forward, her expression intent.
"How? How do we share?"
Wise Bear stared at her for a moment, then uttered a cackle of realization.
"No, so little," he said, shaking his head.
He bent down to guide Kara to her feet and took her hand, holding his other out to Durenna.
"All share."
Durenna rose to take his hand, soon joined by a cautious but clearly intrigued Kirol. Markon hesitated, then went to take the huntress's outstretched hand. Lorcan, however, sat still and stared at them with sullen reluctance until Valen gave him an insistent prod with the tip of his scabbard. He got slowly to his feet, but kept his arms crossed, his gaze lingering on Kara as she swayed a little from fatigue.
"How do we know it won't hurt her?" he asked.
"No hurting," Wise Bear assured him. "Only need small power from each."
"It's all right, Lorcan," Kara said, smiling a little as she held out her hand. "If I trust him, so should you." Valen stood as Lorcan completed the circle, casting a careful eye over the Lonak, sensing their sudden unease. Some murmured softly and turned their backs to walk away. A few lingered, shuffling in discomfort, but seemingly unable to resist the sight of the gifted, or the palpable change in the air around them. A new warmth that prickled the skin and drew a thin mist from the ice beneath their feet. They stood in utter stillness, hands clasped and silent, their features placid, even content, a small smile appearing on Kara's lips as the warmth deepened, and they became wreathed in mist, a thin pool of meltwater playing about their fur-wrapped feet. Valen found himself shamed by a sudden surge of envy, an unwelcome knowledge that such things were lost to him now. At Altor, he had thought himself the master of his song, finding a sense of completion amongst all the blood and carnage.
"I was still just a child," he realized, fighting a burgeoning sense of resentful despair, his gaze fixing on Wise Bear.
"How much could he have told me?"
Kara gave an abrupt gasp, opening her hands to break the circle, her smile turning into a delighted laugh, cheeks flushed with a healthy pinkness. The others seemed similarly enlivened, Markon pulling the girl into an embrace and lifting her with a happy bellow the others all exchanging glances rich in shared joy. Dorena touched hands with Kirill, their faces bright with an identical expression of understanding. She caught sight of Valen and laughed, rushing to wrap her arms around him, her breath hot on his face as she raised herself to plant a kiss on his lips. Looking down at her wide-eyed, honest exuberance, he pulled her close, his resentment withering away. Weisberg gave a grunt of satisfaction and thumped his staff on the ice.
"Sharing," he said, then turned his gaze to the north, his wizened features hardening as he scanned the jagged horizon. "Needed soon."
The storm hit the following day, a gale-driven blizzard swallowing the sun and turning the world into a howling white morass. The air became so thick with snow, every breath drew jagged ice into Valen's throat, and the wind seemed to cut through his furs as if they were no more than paper. He soon found himself fully occupied with holding fast to Scar's reins as the horse stumbled through the piling drifts, head lowered and eyes tight against the wind, his mane frozen and stiff on his neck. "This is madness," he knew with an awful certainty, a gust of wind driving into his side like a hammer blow. "I have doomed us." He turned as a shout reached him through the storm, catching a glimpse of two small figures, no more than the vaguest shadows in the ceaseless white. It seemed as if one of the figures raised something, and the shadows instantly resolved into full clarity. Weisberg holding his bone staff aloft, his other hand clasped tight to Kara's as she knelt at his side, her face bleached and drawn from the cold, but also set in a determined frown. The snow seemed to swirl around them, leaving them in a bubble of calm air, growing larger as they shared their power. The bubble expanded steadily, the calm air sweeping over Valen and Scar, the horse huffing a relieved sigh as the wind abated. Valen cast around until he found Dorena, huddled against her pony's flank. "And I thought the black wind the harshest in this world," she said, forcing a smile as he hurried to her side, lifting her clear of the snow that had collected around her and the pony. Valen surveyed the company, finding them all now nearly enveloped in the bubble, the blizzard still raging beyond its confines. Orvin's guardsmen were the last to receive its shelter, many stumbling to their knees in shock as they struggled free of the storm's fury. He saw Alturk moving amongst the centaur, dealing out cuffs and harsh rebukes as they stood staring in wonder and fear, forcing them back into motion. Valen went to Weisberg and Kara, the shaman still holding her hand, whilst she stood in serene indifference, her gaze distant, face free of any sign of fatigue.
"How long can you do this?" he asked.
"As long as there is power to share," the shaman replied, pointing his staff at the other gifted. "Hope storm ends first."
It took another day and a night for the storm to fade, the gifted taking turns to share their strength with Kara. She was kept in the center of the group, now tightly bunched, to stay within the limits of the bubble she had crafted, moving east at a slow but steady pace. Whilst Kara showed no sign of weariness, the sharing took an evident toll on the others, Markan sinking to his knees when his two-hour shift was done, wiping a trickle of blood from his beard before stumbling on as Valen hauled him up, providing a shoulder to lean on until he recovered sufficiently to walk unaided. Dorena and Kirill were even more drained, rendered unable to walk and sagging pale and listless on the backs of their ponies. For some reason, Lorcan proved the most durable of the gifted, lasting a full 3 hours at Kara's side and only consenting to release her hand at Weisberg's harsh insistence. The storm ended as quickly as it had begun, the wind dying and the last flurries of snow falling to reveal a bright midday sun. Kara swayed a little when Weisberg released her hand, but otherwise seemed unharmed by her exertions, though her initial triumph at the feat dimmed at the sight of her companions.
"I didn't know I had taken so much," she offered to a pale-faced Lorcan. He just smiled and shook his head. "Take all you want." She shifted a little in discomfort at the directness of his gaze, and turned to Weisberg. "We should be cautious. There will be a price, there always is." He nodded and thrust his staff through the snow to touch the ice beneath, angling his head as if straining to hear a distant sound.
He stood unmoving for some time, then straightened and turned to Valen with an urgent light in his eyes.
"Need move fast," he said. "Much fast."
They covered another 6 miles by nightfall, but Wise Bear permitted no rest, hounding them on with impatient wafts of his bone staff and tirades in his own language, unintelligible clicks and grunts that nevertheless conveyed the clear message that to linger meant death. Although cold enough to freeze misted breath, the air was calm now, barely touched by a breeze, the sky clear and bright with stars and the occasional flurry of Grishak's breath. The atmosphere took on such a depth of silence that when it came, the sound was enough to make Valen lift his hands to his already covered ears. It was more a boom than a crack, a tremor thrumming the ice beneath his feet and making Scar rear in alarm. The entire company was forced to halt, as the other horses gave shrill whinnies and sought to break free of their master's grip. The booming crack went on unabated, the sound at first seeming to surround them on all sides, but soon becoming concentrated on the westward flow they had just traversed. Berlin's eyes picking out a curtain of shattered ice, rising from the surface and moving from north to south, so fast his eye couldn't track its course. The sound ended without warning, leaving a vast but brief silence soon filled by a great grinding, almost beast-like in its intensity, as if the ice itself were groaning in pain. Another tremor shook the ice, this time with enough force to tip many from their feet, the surface beneath rising and falling in a great heave as the grinding faded. About a half mile to the west, a fog of displaced snow and ice had risen, lingering for long enough to make Valen wonder if what he looked upon might be some trick of the eye. Could the ice really be moving? As the fog faded, the truth of it became clear. A huge expanse of ice was adrift, snow trailing from its jagged flanks as it detached from the main body and began a southward voyage. It must have measured at least 5 miles across, a newborn island where they would have undoubtedly perished as it bore them away. Kirill woke him whilst the sky was still dark, shaking him from Dorena's slumbering embrace with insistent shoves. "My song is dark," she said. "Something to the north." He followed her to the northern flank of the camp, where they found Alturk kneeling amidst a broad patch of red-stained ice, gloved hands tracing the marks left by a brief but furious struggle. Valen had enough tracking skill to discern the meaning of the surrounding marks, the amount of blood, and the furrows leading away into the blackness beyond the firelight.
"How many were taken?" he asked.
"One, and his pony." Alturk rose to his full height, heavy brows knitted in mingled anger and puzzlement. "These marks I do not know." Valen looked down at the impressions left in the snow. A paw print, large enough for a black bear, but not a brown.
"Not a bear," Kirill said, tracing an outline around one of the marks with the tip of her hunting knife.
She rose to unsling her bow. "My song will find it soon enough."
"No."
She turned at the sound of Wise Bear's voice, the shaman striding closer to prod at the bloodied prince with his staff.
"Said to leave a trail, so you would follow."
"Something hunts us," Alturk said. Wise Bear said something in his own language, mouth twisting in disgust, as if the words stained his tongue. He caught Valen's inquiring gaze and provided a terse translation.
"Cat people."
"I hoped they had all perished." Dorena sat close to the fire, extra furs heaped on her shoulders, clasping hands with Kara and Lorcan. They were so few in number after the battle. Valen resisted the impulse to ask her to forget this. Shared strength or not, her gift always exacted a heavy toll, and the prospect of once again confronting the ice horde no doubt stirred ugly memories. She saw his concern and gave a reassuring smile. "A short flight only. Wise Bear assures me they can't be far." She closed her eyes, body stiffening and her face taking on the expressionless mask that indicated she had flown free. Kara and Kirill both issuing a gasp at the sensation.
"She takes much," Kirill said with a grimace.
"What is this?" Valen glanced up to find Alturk at his side, gazing at Dorena with deep suspicion. Like all the Lonak, His distrust of the dark was obvious, but so far he was the only one who dared inquire as to its nature.
"She seeks our hunter," Valen told him.
The Talesa paced back and forth as the Renner continued to sit immobile, his face betraying the only sign of fear Valen had yet seen in him.
"There are gifted among your people," he said, nodding at Kirol. "She serves the Malesa, as you do."
"As she should, for such things are only for the Malesa to know. Children like her are taken to the mountain. If not, they grow to be Varnish, or worse."
"What happens to them at the mountain?"
Alterc shrugged.
"Some come back, some do not."
Valen returned his gaze to Darenna, recalling her tale of the wolf and the men who had come to lay waste to her village. It took her away before she could journey to the mountain. Was it saving her from death, or from something worse?
Darenna's face spasmed, and she uttered a harsh groan, slumping forward, prevented from falling into the fire by Kirol and Kara, who gently guided her onto her back.
She shuddered for a while as her body returned to warmth, finally getting to her feet, a deep frown betraying barely controlled pain.
"A rock," she said, "jutting from the ice 5 miles to the northwest. Only one man, but many cats. I think he sensed me, and I don't think he liked it."
Wisebear's staff thumped hard onto the ice, his ancient face twisting as he voiced the name in his own language. Ironclaw seemed to sense his master's fury, and lumbered to his side with an inquisitive growl.
"You know who we face?" Valen asked him.
"Cat people, shaman," Wisebear said. "The one who set them to war. Cat people named him Shadowed Path. Bear people call him No Eyes."
The centaur adopted a battle formation as they moved towards the northwest, stringing out in a loose but cohesive skirmish line for 100 paces on either side of the company, the gifted in the center leading the horses and ponies. Orvin's company brought up the rear, marching with swords drawn, under orders to keep a constant watch on all approaches. Valen took the lead alongside Alterc and Wisebear, Kirol trailing a little behind, with an arrow notched to her bow. Ironclaw was out ahead, moving at a sedate run with an occasional pause to sniff the air. Valen was struck by the abrupt change in Wisebear, but for his creased face, all signs of age seemed to have vanished, and he moved with a steady, unfaltering stride, bone staff gripped tight and eyes locked on Ironclaw. He knew the expression well, a man intent on revenge. Ironclaw halted, and Wisebear raised his staff, bringing the company to a stop. The bear swayed from side to side, voicing a low rumble of disquiet as it eyed the ice ahead. It was different from the usual flat expanse. The surface raised in places to form jagged, abstract shapes, wreathed in a low-hanging mist. In the distance, Valen could see the dim grey spike of the rock Darenna had described, stabbing at the clear sky like a misshapen dagger.
"Good place for ambush," Alterc commented, eyes tracking over the fractured icescape.
Wisebear strode to Ironclaw's side, and took a two-handed hold of his staff, raising it above his head and standing immobile. He uttered no sound, but Kirill's sudden gasp indicated he had sent a message by different means. Valen saw the huntress's gaze darken somewhat as she stared at the old man, her eyes betraying an even greater depth of awe, along with a clear sense of dread that caused Valen to wonder what grim notes rose from her song. Wisebear lowered his staff, expression unchanged as he stood waiting. It was only the space of a few seconds before an answer rose from the jagged ice, a cacophony of hissing, feral howls, a sound he had only heard from one beast before, but now there were many. He unslung his own bow as Kirol moved quickly to Wisebear's side. Valen shrugged free of his heaviest furs and moved to the shaman's left, arrow notched, eyes scanning for the slightest movement.
"There!"
Kirol shouted, her bow coming up, but Valen was faster, his shaft flying free in an instant, streaking towards a silver-grey shape that had leapt into sight from behind a jagged ice pillar. It bounded on for a few strides, then tumbled to the snow, lying still. Wisebear gave a harsh grunt and started forward,
Iron Claw loping in his path.
"We should wait," Vernon told him. "There are more."
Wise Bear ignored him and kept on, betraying no reaction at all when a dozen more war cats appeared out of the ice and charged towards him at full pelt. Valin judged them as roughly the same size as Snowdance, but of much leaner appearance, their fur patchy and far more ragged, and their eyes. Snowdance was fearsome, but he had never seen her eyes shine with such malevolent intent. He put an arrow into the cat directly to his front, as Kirill claimed two more in quick succession. The centaur's bows also thrummed into life, more cats falling to the swarm of arrows, but leaving six still charging at Wise Bear, too fast for any archer to claim. The lead cat, larger and even more ragged in appearance than its companions, leapt at Ironclaw, fangs bared and eyes blazing with an unnervingly knowing hatred. The great bear's claw caught it in mid-air before it could land a bite, sending it sprawling. It scrabbled on the ice, gathering itself, then leaping once more, its wailing hiss enough to pain the ears. This time Ironclaw made sure of the kill, both arms closing on the cat as it sought to latch its fangs onto his throat, ribs breaking with audible cracks as it was borne to the ice and the bear stamped down, his shoulders rising and falling in rapid hammer blows until the beast lay in a broken and bloody ruin. Vernon notched a second arrow and took a bead on the other cats, finding to his horror that Wise Bear now stood before them, arms open and offering no resistance as they closed. Velin drew back his bowstring, aiming for the nearest cat's flank.
"Don't!"
Kirill laid a hand on his arm.
"Wait!"
Altok barked a command at the centaur and they lowered their bows, standing in appalled amazement as Wise Bear extended a hand to one of the beasts, and it shrank back, the snarl fading from its face, eyes suddenly freed of hate. The shaman's eyes roamed over each of the cats, producing an identical result, every one becoming instantly cowed under his gaze, lowering themselves in supplication, eyes averted, some even trembling. Wise Bear turned to Valin, his expression no less implacable than before.
"You come, others stay."
They proceeded through the maze of jagged ice alone, save for Ironclaw, who was obliged to clamber over much of the disrupted surface as their way became ever more narrow.
"How did you do that?" Vernon asked, unsure whether he wanted or would even understand the answer.
The more he learned of Wise Bear, the more mysterious and more worrying his power.
"No eyes grows weak," the shaman replied, a grim note of satisfaction in his voice. "Hold slackens. Cats are mine now."
"So there was no need for us to kill the others?"
Wise Bear paused as they came to an opening in the ice ahead, little more than a narrow crack in the blue-white wall. Beyond it, Velin could see a patch of granite, the spike of the huge rock now looming above them, its flanks gleaming like poorly polished metal where ice had found purchase.
"Not enough meat for all," Wise Bear said,
his gaze locked onto Valen's, fierce and certain.
"Say nothing. Do nothing. Listen only."
The ice beyond the crack was flat, forming a wide frozen moat around the great rock. Wise Bear led Valin to the right, a burgeoning stench of something rotten birthing a nausea in his gut, deepening at the sight of a large, brownish-black stain spreading out from the rock's eastern face. Moving closer, Valin saw the stain was littered with bones, seal vertebrae and ribs mostly, but here and there the unmistakable shape of a human skull, picked clean of flesh. The source of the stench became clear a moment later, a freshly dismembered pony carcass lying beside a shallow grotto in the face of the rock. From the crude but regular shape of it, Velin deduced it as a man-made feature, providing some measure of shelter from these terrible climbs. A man sat at the base of the grotto, clad in moulded furs and seated on what appeared to be a chair fashioned from lashed-together bone. He was old, though not as old as Wise Bear, his skin leathery and discoloured, red sores visible on his bald head and cadaverous cheeks, and his eyes were two dark patches of old scar tissue. He sat so still, Velin initially assumed him a corpse, but then saw his nostrils flaring as he caught their scent, and a thin smile curved his cracked lips.
"We'll speak in my brother's tongue, old friend," he said to Wise Bear. "It's only polite, don't you think?" Valen knew him then, the awful familiarity of his voice, the same mocking smile. Wise Bear raised a hand, and he realized he had unconsciously taken hold of his sword and started forward, intent on this thing's immediate murder. The witch's bastard! How long has he been waiting? He released his grip and stepped back as Wise Bear stood regarding the thing in silence. "Nothing to say?" the thing inquired, hairless brows raised above its scar eyes. "No final curses or long-prepared speeches?" "I've heard many over the years. Sadly, most are rather forgettable." Wise Bear kept silent, shifting his gaze to the bones littering the surrounding ice, using his staff to prod at a skull lying amidst a shattered ribcage. It was small, little larger than an apple, but clearly human. "Last of the cat people," the thing said, hearing the sound of bone on bone. "They died happy, you know, worshipping me, content to surrender their flesh in sustenance of my divine light." His grin widened, revealing blackened and half-rotted teeth, his eyeless face turning to Valen. "They were a remarkable people, brother. Centuries spent living apart from all vestige of what we term civilization. Yet they had laws, art, and wisdom enough to survive in the harshest place on earth. But they had no notion of a god until I taught it to them. And how quickly they succumbed to the idea. After all, what else would you call a man who comes back to life after a spear hawk rips the eyes from his skull?" The cracked lips lost their smile, the face turning to Wise Bear once more. "It could all have been avoided, old friend. If you had but opened your heart to my message, my great mission for the Ice People. The southern lands would have fallen to us, and the great forest beyond. Now your people are a wasted remnant, and mine nothing but bones." The sound of breaking ice heralded Iron Claw's arrival as he clambered over the surrounding wall, moving to Wise Bear's side, nostrils flaring at the scent of flesh. The eyeless man stiffened at the sound of the bear's approach, but his voice remained free of fear. "You cannot threaten me, little man. Your beast holds no horrors for me. Ask my brother. He killed me once before, and yet here I am, as I am elsewhere. I have waited here these long years for you to come. Pity my cats proved unequal to the task, but I am patient, and I suspect you still have far to go."
"So you wait," Wise Bear said, moving forward in a rush, his hand flashing out to clamp onto the eyeless man's bald scalp. "Wait longer."
The eyeless man's mouth gaped, foul air rushing forth as he voiced a soundless scream, jerking spasmodically on his bone chair. He tried to claw at Wise Bear's arm, but his fingers lacked any strength, fluttering like feathers over his sleeve as he convulsed. Finally, the shaman released him, stepping back as the eyeless man sagged, his face a mask of confusion and pain.
"What did you do?"
he asked in a faint rasp, his hands flailing at his own chest and face, the nails leaving shallow scars on his flesh.
"You wait," Wise Bear said again, turning his back. "Then you die. Forever."
"This is—"
The thing tried to rise from the bone chair, reaching out to Wise Bear as he began to walk away.
"This is impossible!"
Wise Bear didn't turn, striding towards the crack in the ice wall with Iron Claw lumbering along behind.
"Brother!"
It slid from the bone chair, reaching out to Valen as it crawled towards him, imploring,
"Brother, make him free me!"
Valen watched the thing crawl, seeing how little strength remained in its limbs, a twisted collection of skin and bone destined to perish when night brought a deadly chill. He gave no reply, turning to follow Wise Bear.
"You loved Barkus," the thing called, voice cracking. "I am Barkus. I am your brother."
Valen kept walking.
"I have knowledge. I know the Allies' design."
Valen stopped.
"I know."
The thing's voice faltered as he dragged air into ruined lungs.
"I know what he wants."
"So do I,"
Valen said, glancing over his shoulder, seeing a dying man flailing amidst rotting flesh. "He wants to make an end. And we will."
Did you kill all of it?
Wise Bear gave a regretful smile and shook his head. They had encamped in the shadow of the great rock, amidst the shelter offered by the jagged ice, the Lonak raising their shelters at an even greater remove than usual, disconcerted by the five warcats that sat around the shaman in unnerving silence. Velin turned to watch as Kara cautiously held a morsel of seal meat out to one of the cats, the beast ignoring her until Wise Bear glanced in its direction, whereupon it snapped the treat from her fingers in a lightning bob of its head. "Only part," he said, turning back and extending his hand, splaying the stubby fingers. "Take one. Can still use." He went on, miming the amputation of his thumb and making a fist. "But weaker now."
"If we find other parts of it," Velin said, "can you do the same to them?"
Wise Bear nodded.
"If we find."
Velin looked at the looming rock spike, wondering if the witch's bastard still somehow clung to life.
"I suspect you still have far to go," it had said.
"It knew we were coming, but not why."
"Oh, I've little doubt they'll find us."
Chapter 9. Lerner.
Tau Lord Albera's health had improved greatly since the liberation of Varenshold, his skin notably less pale, and his hands free of any tremors. However, he still had difficulty standing for long periods, and Lerner had been quick to usher him into a chair. She had summoned him to her father's old rooms adjoining the council chamber. Once richly adorned with various treasures, it was now, of course, stripped of all but a few paintings and tapestries. Former possessions of the late Lord Darnell, no doubt looted